Do you swear on the Constitution of the United States to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
This is Police Radio,
the voice of American law enforcement,
with your host, Randy Sutton.
Hello and welcome to this special edition, part number two of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, the episode entitled Screwed Blue. This is a three-part series involving the arrest and conviction of Pittsburgh Police Sergeant Stephen Matakovich. Sergeant Matakovich was a Pittsburgh police sergeant who was working as part of an off-duty assignment at the Steelers Stadium, Heinz Stadium, when he made an arrest at the direction and at the inclination of the security department at Heinz Stadium. The individual was not someone who wanted to cooperate, and during the arrest, Sergeant Matakovich used physical force on him. Now, the problem is that the individuals who were running the surveillance at the stadium had access to five camera views. They erased four of them, took one of them to the chief of police, and the next day, Sergeant Matakovich was arrested. He was eventually convicted by a federal jury after local charges were dismissed. How did this happen? How did an individual get arrested when there was no complaint filed by the individual who was supposedly had excessive force used against him, who never testified against him? And that's what Screwed Blue is going to talk about. In this particular episode, this is episode two of the three-part, you're going to hear from the union president of the Pittsburgh Police Association. He is going to give his perspective of what he saw as he watched every step of this take place, the arrest and eventual conviction of Sergeant Matakovich. Screwed Blue, you decide. With me today on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, is the head of the Fraternal Order of Police, Fort Pitt Lodge Number 1, that represents the working men and women of the Pittsburgh Police Department, the union president, Bob Swartzwelder. He's with me today to discuss the case of Sergeant Stephen Matakovich, who was interviewed earlier today and is part of the ongoing investigation on what took place against Sergeant Matakovich by the federal government and the Pittsburgh Steelers organization.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Bob, thanks so much for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Randy, thank you so much for having me and for covering the story.
You know, you've represented a lot of police officers in your time as the president of the FOP Lodge that represents the Pittsburgh police officers. Have you ever seen a case like what's going on with Sergeant Mitakovich?
In my tenure here with the city of Pittsburgh, Randy, which it spans 25-year career with him so far, this case is appalling. So to answer that question directly, I would say no. We've had other officers get involved in officer-involved shootings, just like any other police department in the country. But this case is unique because of the lack of injury and the lack of the, we'll call him the victim, according to the government, that was involved in this use of force by Sergeant Mitakovich, never even appearing to testify, nor did he suffer any type of injury during this use of force.
Let's go back to how you got involved to begin with. What was how did you get brought into this?
Well, when I took over as president in March of 2016 at Fraternal Order Police Lodge Number 1, I have a role to play, and my role is very specific. So I have to look out for the officers' rights, make sure they have adequate legal representation, things of that nature. Steve had already been arrested 3 times, twice by the state and then once by the federal government. So the state then stayed their charges, and he proceeded with the federal government. That all happened prior to me becoming the president. But I was well aware of the case because I also work in training. And the chief of police, Cameron McClay, had requested that I look at some materials involving the case. And they had their own use of force trainer look at the same materials. I reviewed briefly the report that the use of force expert that the chief appointed, his report to look at it. I had no, it wasn't a good idea to try to dispute it at that time because we didn't have all the evidence. In other words, we didn't have all the video evidence. We didn't have witness statements. And anytime you're going to do an expert witness review, you should have all that available to you before you ever render an opinion. Well, that didn't happen in this case. From my viewpoint, they basically determined that Steve had committed a criminal excessive force action, not a departmental, but a criminal as well as departmental excessive force action based solely on a video and one viewpoint of that video. So I did not get involved at that point, nor did I render any opinions at that point. As the case progressed, I then became very involved with his attorney, Tina Miller, brilliant attorney, very, very dedicated criminal defense lawyer, a lot of experience, been with the bar a long time. And I started to assist with the case, you know, outlining, she would ask me questions about policy, things of that nature that is within my purview as the president to review. I review all Pittsburgh police policies to make sure if an officer gets in trouble or charged departmentally, I understand those policies. I subsequently actually testified in Steve's case because he was charged with 2 particular federal crimes. One, of course, was violation of civil rights under search and seizure-based statutes. He committed an illegal seizure by using excessive force. That's the government's allegation. And another one where he had falsely submitted information by failing to check a box on a police report.
Wait a minute, hold on a second. What?
Yes, Randy, that's correct. He failed to check a box which indicated video evidence. And the problem with that box is it's not very consistent. And as a matter of fact, they've since changed the policy. So there wasn't a policy, the department policy, and I know you're familiar with those, having served in law enforcement for a lengthy period of yourself. You know, you have the face blocks on a police report where you check certain things and X certain things, and then, of course, you have the narrative in the police report. What's that? Right. Video evidence. Well, we have different officers that If they take the evidence, that's when they check the box. And if they don't take the evidence, they don't check the box. In Steve's case, he did not check the right. So he did not take the evidence or take custody of the evidence or take it into his possession. So part of the government's theory was that because he failed to check that box, he was materially obstructing a federal investigation, which may take place sometime in the future. That's the government's theory.
You've got to be kidding me. They hung their hat on that to prosecute?
Yes, that was one of the charges. That's correct. So my role in that particular instance was I took the witness stand in that case and explained how officers do different things and how they sometimes check it, how they sometimes don't, why they do it, why they don't, et cetera, et cetera. And he was, of course, acquitted of that particular charge, the falsity nature of that charge. Now, what was interesting was one of the FBI agents that was involved in the investigation, he had also submitted reports, of course, to his investigation. And Tina Miller can talk about this more in depth when you interview her. But he was asked on the witness stand why he didn't check certain boxes. So, of course, now the jury hears my testimony, and the jury hears an FBI agent, and he explained, you know, his role, and Tina can go more in depth with you about that, why he didn't check it. And it was very, very much very similar. He doesn't take it, but in his case, he actually did take the evidence, and that's another part that I'm very, very upset with, was the lack of preservation of video evidence in this case, because it's appalling, and it's very shocking. And that's why I believe this case had an agenda from the beginning, and it wasn't, as you well know, a gathering of the facts to determine the truth and provide the best possible case to the fact finder. This was a gathering of some evidence.
Explain what you mean by that.
Well, a criminal investigation, as we all know, or any investigation, is the unbiased review or investigation, and you want to gather all facts, within your purview with a diligent investigation to determine the truth, what really happened, and then you provide that evidence to the fact finder. Now, that could be a trial court, like what happened in this case. That could be an internal departmental review. In other words, if an officer is going to be disciplined for his or her actions, and you want to gather all those facts without a theory. You let the evidence drive the theory of the case. You don't have a theory and then look for evidence. I believe what happened in this case is they had a theory and only looked for the evidence that met their theory.
Okay, now when you're talking about they, who are you referring to?
Everyone. I'm talking about the chief of police, to the investigators involved, to the government itself that brought the case. And ultimately, any prosecution, of course, as you well know, rests with the prosecutorial authority, whether that's state court or that's federal court. And I had been to the scene numerous times, and I actually went last night in preparation for this interview, again, just to verify the number of cameras that are present there where this incident happened. And there's at least 5 to 7 right there that would have captured this event from the view that you see that's been posted on the internet in different locations. But what is not seen is that is the only viewpoint. There are multiple other viewpoints. If you know anything about major football fields today or baseball stadiums and concert halls and all these types of things, there's cameras everywhere. Now, people think that's for their safety, but it's typically primarily installed for insurance purposes because people can fall. They can have crimes committed on them there. They can make false allegations against those entities. You could see where this could become astronomical civil liability for them if they didn't have the ability to document. So there's cameras everywhere around these facilities. When they went down, when the investigators, different investigators went to the scene, they obtained one video and did not preserve the others. And these are in the public filing. So the information that I'm speaking to you about, you have the ability to obtain. These are in different public filings that were presented to the court through motions. And so, of course, your listeners are probably familiar with, and when these cases occur, different motions are filed by both sides, both the prosecution, both by the defense, to turn over discovery materials. And in this country, a criminal defendant is entitled to all the material that the government has obtained in their investigation. Now, the federal government will tell you they don't, and they actually say that in some of their filings. Well, not really, and they make all these ridiculous arguments. Well, if you're going to put a police officer in jail, okay, then you're going to owe him, you owe him or her the same investigation you would do for any other citizen. That didn't happen in this case. They did not preserve all the evidence. And the government actually put in some of their filings, well, the evidence was recorded over because we didn't get to it in time. That is absolutely false. Because we have investigator notes, which are also part of the filings, where these different investigative agencies, FBI, local law enforcement officers, et cetera, are identified in those notes of being present well before this record over time of these videos. So the problem then applies, and I agree with this theory, that if Sergeant Matakovich is a liar, which is their theory, which is the prosecution's theory in this case, that he lied and he intentionally covered up a future investigation that all of us as law enforcement are supposed to know is going to occur. In other words, their assumption is that when we go out and investigate a crime, we are to assume we are going to be investigated by the feds at some point. That's the assumption that they render in their court files, which is ridiculous. When I go out and make an arrest or investigate any type of crime, I'm doing it to help the person that called me there or involving the event. I'm not looking to the future. I'm just doing the best job I can based on the information that I have.
Of course. Now, let's go back to the beginning of this, because you brought something up that I think is really important. Now, before you were actively involved in, as far as your role as union president, you had basically observed the initial stages of the department's review in your role in training. And this was at the behest of the chief of police. What was his name again?
Cameron McClay, M-C, capital L-A-Y. You can look him up on
here. What kind of chief was he?
He came from Wisconsin, so a smaller department, not that that's good or bad, came from a smaller department in Wisconsin into the city of Pittsburgh, which he had never served in. So he enters into the department as the chief. So he never worked there as a patrol cop or a detective or a sergeant or a lieutenant or any of those different type of roles that where you get to learn the culture and the climate and the nature of, you know, all the problems are local, as you well know. And so policing gets modeled based on that culture in that area. So there are cultures in society where people just swear at the cops as a matter of conversation. It's how they talk to you. You know, it's not offensive. We're used to it because they just do, depending on different parts of where you are in society. And I don't think he was aware of that. So he came in with this viewpoint right on the heels of Chief Harper. We had our former chief was arrested by the federal government for misuse of funds. So he came in that I'm going to clean up the corruption in Pittsburgh and the racism in Pittsburgh. Like, we're all racist police officers. And so he did some things publicly that did not sit well with the rank and file. So when I took over as the president, he would make assertions to me and then would not follow through with them. So then our relationship between the Fraternal Order of Police and him became very strained. Because of his failure to follow through on his, we'll call it, promises or assertions to the department. Some of the things that he would do, we have a labor contract that states how events are supposed to be manned. In other words, at Heinz Field or at where the Penguins play or where the Pirates play. And they're supposed to be manned by off-duty officers. Well, when... I forget the singer's name. Beyonce came into town. There was a lot of problems in the law enforcement world about her one video. You may be familiar. She did a video.
Yeah, she did an anti-police video. Right, exactly.
Correct, right. Okay, so you're familiar with that video. So
yes.
A lot of our officers chose not to volunteer for that detail. Now, in our secondary employment provisions of our contract, all secondary employment is voluntary. Well, when they couldn't get it manned with police because they just didn't want to work, Chief McClay mandated that they go and work on duty. So he sent them there. Well, that didn't sit well with the rank and file, and it didn't sit well with me either. And so, of course, I filed grievances, which is how you that's the paperwork that you file when someone violates your labor agreement, and then you go to arbitration.
Well, let me cut to the chase here. Do you think that this chief's politics played any role in what took place with the
100%, 100%, Randy, absolutely, without any shadow of a doubt.
And why do you say that?
Because of the nature of the investigation. He asserted himself as a use of force expert. He said he had been a use of force expert, qualified such in court. Now, I've been doing use of force expert work since 1995. And anybody that does use of force expert witness work knows you need all the evidence. Let me see it all before you render an opinion. So you need to conduct a thorough investigation. You had one piece of evidence, which is a video, and you're questioning him on a video.
Where there were numerous videos accessible, but only one that was actually entered into evidence.
Correct. Only one, because they failed, and I believe intentionally failed, to preserve all the other viewpoints. And here's why I say that. If he's a liar, if Sergeant Matakovich is a liar, and I'm going to put a police officer in jail, I'm going to get every view I can from the front, from the rear, from the sides, or the flanks, to determine whether or not his statements are accurate. Because a police officer only sees the event one time, once. The video, which is what they did to Steve in this case, was played over and over and over and over again, which in my view violates Graham versus Carter, which is the standard in this country, that the officer must make their decisions in circumstances that are tense, uncertain, rapidly evolving, and without the ability of 20/20 hindsight.
Okay, let's get back to a little off topic here. Why do you think that the politics of this chief played a role in the prosecution and persecution of Sergeant Matakovich?
Well, I think he wanted a pound of flesh. I think he wanted to put himself in the limelight, that I'm the chief that's going to clean things up. Look, here's an example of police corruption, and I'm going to have this officer fired and arrested post haste. And that's exactly what he did. Without the full investigation, he did that. Now, well, let me tell you what he does. So to follow up, so Steve gets charged originally with a state charge. No falsity, no nothing. He just gets charged with excessive force by the state, assault, and he goes to his preliminary hearing. So he attends his preliminary hearing at state court, and the magistrate throws the case out. And in his remarks, he said this is proper format for an internal departmental hearing. Well, that's not good enough for that chief. So then they continue to dig, and they're able to determine that he doesn't check the box. So then they said he committed false statements, perjury with a false police report. So then they refile with the false police report and the assault. They get a different judge, and then they hold the charges. In that interim, then the federal government steps in. And if you know anything about Heinz Field, some of their directors are former agents.
All right, let's get into that now. It's my understanding from Sergeant Matakovich that the individual who he arrested that day never filed any charges against him.
That is correct. He actually pled. Steve worked out a plea because he received phone calls basically from the defense side pleading for this guy to have reduction. So, you know, being that he's intoxicated, he's a young kid, Steve agreed to do that. And everybody acts like Steve did not do that. Gabriel Dupree, the individual that was involved, and it's in a court filing, so I'm not saying anything that's not public, pled to the charge. And he pled to a lesser offenses.
Right.
And he never, ever filed a departmental charge. His attorney never filed a departmental charge. They never claimed anything that Steve did anything inappropriate or excessive or incorrect.
Who is the one that is responsible for creating this prosecution?
Well, I think it's a combination of the district attorney, the chief of police, and the federal government. I think there was an agenda at the time because of the nature of the U.S. Attorney's Office there, also the chief of police, and the DA's office.
But it had to get to them. Before it correct. Got to well, them, who is it that pushed this that pushed a prosecution if it wasn't the alleged victim here?
Hines Field notified the department. So Hines Field notifies the department, we have this video. And it was specifically about Steve Mitakovich.
And Hines Field is the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Right, that's the home of the Pittsburgh Steelers. That's correct. Now, you have to understand, you have the Steelers organization, in other words, the coaches and the owners of the Steelers themselves, the actual football team, and then you also have the management that manages Hines Field that doesn't just deal with the Steelers, but it also deals with other events that occur there. So how in-depth the Steelers are in this particular event, they're higher up. It's not going to be the players, of course. What do they care? They're football players. It's not going to be the coaches. What do they care? They coach football. But it's going to be those administrators that run that organization that decide to take this video and take it to the chief of police and show it to him. And I know that Steve himself has had words with some of those administrators over there because they wanted him to do things and or police officers to do things that are based on their own internal rules and not police rules. Police are required to follow the rules and regulations of the police department and not get involved in private disputes. You know, if there's things that occur at that stadium that should be handled privately, that's up for their internal security staff and their internal areas to handle. Well, Steve would have words with them when they wanted, with these individuals, when they wanted him to enforce their rules and not the rules of the department or the laws of the Commonwealth. And so they had this disagreeing relationship because they couldn't get rid of Steve because he's a good employee and he was a good supervisor. So the way to get rid of him, from my viewpoint, let's show this video, one viewpoint of the video, and present it to the police department. And that's what happened. And then from there on in, everything changed for Steve. I mean, his whole life, his 22-year career was just turned upside down.
What you're saying here is frightening. I mean, what you're saying here is the Steelers and Hines Field management, do they hold a lot of political influence with Pittsburgh?
Yeah, they're like gods here because you know everybody loves the Steelers. You know they're well known worldwide, you go to every state. When you go to other stadiums in other states that have their own teams, you always have Steelers fans there. You have bars set up in Florida. Steelers are home in Pittsburgh. They have whole bars in Florida just set up a Steeler Nation and things like that. So the Steelers are very, very well known. They're a very, very, very good football team. And they hold a lot of weight here in the city of Pittsburgh. And, so when they speak, and I'll give you a classic example, which is very, very disturbing. We had two supervisors, excellent, excellent sergeant and a lieutenant, that were supervising a detail there, you know, this off-duty secondary employment detail. It was a holiday, and on that particular holiday, we get holiday pay for that detail, which is double time. So the city pays us double time when we work a holiday. So does everybody else required to do so. Well, the Steelers didn't want to pay. So these two supervisors that had been working there for years, and I mean years, Randy, pushed back. They said, no, you're obligated to pay, And they kept pushing back, and the Steelers had them removed from the detail, something they had done for years for them. And the department didn't back them. They said, nope, you're done. And rather than push back on the labor agreements and so on, they just removed those two very tenured supervisors because it was at the behest of that organization. The Hines Field organization.
Yeah, I'd have to say that is disturbing. So their reach is massive and very powerful. And
if these two supervisors, let's say they did something inappropriate, you know, they violated the rules and regulations of the department, or you know, they were not conducting themselves as professionals when they were working as supervisors there over these officers. Okay, maybe you have an argument to remove somebody from a secondary employment detail because you push back on payroll rights. That's absurd. And that goes to show you how powerful they are. The department's obligation was to say, no, that's the way it is. You have to pay, and we're not removing those two individuals. That's correct. That we run a police department, you run your organization, we'll run a police department. That's not what happened. You had the tail wagging the dog in this case. You had a private entity telling a police force how they're going to run their police department.
Exactly. That's what happened. And you think that that's exactly what happened in Sergeant Mitakovich's case?
Well, sure. Because, and here's why I believe that. You have individuals over there that run their security. That's their job, security, Randy. And you know this as a tenured police officer yourself. So if you have video that's going to show all these different viewpoints, you want that video. You want it all. And if it doesn't show anything, okay, great. It doesn't show anything. But you're going to preserve it, and you're going to turn it over, and you're going to review it. At least I hope you would. I think you would based on your career, and that's what I would do. So I'm going to gather all the video. Well, you see in the investigative notes where the Hines Field personnel tell the officer that's doing the investigation, no, there's no other video, just this one video. Well, that's not your decision to make. I'm the investigator. I want all of those videos preserved. You follow me? See the disturbing nature here?
Of course I do. Of course I do.
You don't tell me what evidence I want. Hey, look, this camera, I want this camera, this camera, this camera, this camera. All these cameras that can capture this event at this intersection, I want them all preserved. If they don't show anything, okay, great, but we're going to have it. We're going to make sure it doesn't show anything. That's not what happened. Again, the tail was wagging the proverbial dog. The Hines Field organization told this investigator, this is the only video, there are no other videos. And that's as early as 9 days after the event. 9 days. So their record over period is 30 days. So that's what really bothers me. If all it does is just show a truck or a light pole or an empty lot, okay, then we'll look at 2 hours of an empty lot or we'll look at 2 hours of a light pole. Then we're going to be able to determine as investigators, and that's part of the tedious nature of police work or investigative work, sometimes you just stare at a video for 2 hours and it shows you nothing. Okay, now you can put that piece of investigative evidence to bed. You've reviewed it. You now know it doesn't show anything, and you're able to document that and preserve that for the defense or whatever other fact-finding entity that wants to see it. They did not do that for Steve. They did not do it. And to me, that's disturbing and also legally reprehensible.
You know, what? This is disturbing on a whole lot of different levels, Bob.
Correct.
Mean, basically, you've got a gigantic, powerful organization in the Steelers, and they target a police sergeant who is not just a veteran police officer, but a highly decorated hero cop. And they target him for destruction and wind up manipulating him into federal prison.
Correct. I mean, and come on, Randy. I mean, you're an experienced police officer yourself. Why? Here's the elephant in the room, for lack of a better term. Why not pull all the evidence? Why not pull all the video evidence? Why not? Prove that he's a liar. Here's every angle that we have that covered that event, and we're going to prove you're lying. We're going to prove it to you unequivocally. We're going to show you 9 different viewpoints of why you're lying. But here we're only going to show you one. Because if it shows his adjustment, that's the problem with police work. And when you look at video, is that, you know, camera sees things differently and different angles than the human eye and all that kind of stuff. And I don't want to bore your listeners with all that detail. But the point is, these other cameras are going to pick up different vantage points.
Of course.
They're going to pick up different angles. And we've seen that time and time again in officer-involved shootings and so on. You'll see the officer, and it looks like he's just shooting him in the back without any justification. And then another officer's dash cam video will pick up the angle where the individual is actually raising up the firearm or bringing his hands up, holding even a cell phone in a two-hand hold like a firearm. That video is on the internet. And then the officer's fired, you know, because he held it up like a gun, you know, right there in the middle of a dark
area. Exactly. Right. I mean, we've all seen that video evidence can be very, very damning. Or it can be, it can exonerate, but it all depends on the angle. So when there's only one angle, and you know that that the other cameras could have easily shown that that Sergeant Mitakovich's actions were perfectly justifiable in his arrest and takedown, what you have there is a kangaroo court.
What you have there, Randy, is the theory driving the evidence, not the evidence driving the theory. That's exactly what you have, because you're corrupting the case. If you know that it's there, and I can't say this point over and over, and it may sound a little boring to you, but the point I'm making is, show me all the video and prove to me from these different angles that either A, it shows nothing, or B, maybe it does. And what you see in the investigative notes that are part of the public filings is you have a Hinesfield representative, the tail, wagging the investigative dog of the investigators, telling them there's no other video. I'm just telling you that. That is not how this works. And just as an example, I've had two additional use of force investigations since that time. I can't get into the details because it's not public, but I can talk about my role in those investigations. I have to hire a private investigator because I cannot do a self-assigned investigation. Okay, that's in my rules, right? So let's follow the rules. So I have to hire a private investigator. I hire that private investigator, and then I give them directions. Hey, I need all the video. I need all the angles. And we go and serve preservation of video requests on all of that. We have now had to take the role as a union to protect our officers' rights. And you know why we do that, Randy? Because of the Steve Natakovich case. We cannot trust an open and fair and unbiased investigation to gather all the evidence to determine the truth and provide the best possible case. We have to spend union funds to make sure that is done. And that's not why we exist. Unions exist to deal with internal payroll issues and so on. And now we have to take on the role of hiring private investigators to make sure our officers' rights and they receive a fair investigation. Now we have to do that. Now we have to take an active role.
That's really frightening.
Yes, it is.
That your own police administration and clearly the federal government, the U.S. Attorney's Office in your area, are. In essence, I hate to use this word, but it's corruption. It's the misuse of power.
Well, okay, Randy, so we'll call it that. But let's flip the other way, too. Is it incompetence? Right? So we could go both ways, right? So if we're saying, so if they come back to you or me or anybody and say, we're highly competent. Okay, then. So what does it mean that you didn't preserve the evidence then? So if you're highly competent,
right,
and you know exactly what you're doing, then the flip side of that is the answer is corruption. So what is it? You let the theory drive the evidence, not the evidence drive the theory. And you know, I'm just talking about my 30 years experience because I spent 5 years in a small community outside Pittsburgh before I became a Pittsburgh officer. And that's how I do it. The evidence drives my theory. My theory never drives my evidence. And in Steve Natakovich's case, the theory drove the evidence. They wanted a result. They sought out the evidence that would give them the result they wanted. And so, and I agree with you, and you framed it very nicely. Okay, are you corrupt or are you incompetent? If you say you're highly competent, that only leaves us with one conclusion: you're corrupt. And I agree with you.
You know, this is the system crushing a dedicated, heroic police officer, and is frightening on a massive scale. It is it's unconscionable that he was, in essence, railroaded into prison by an organization as powerful as the Pittsburgh Steelers, with the complicitness of the chief of police and the district attorney's office and the United States attorney's office.
And here's what, and look, watch the full ramifications here too, Randy. So we have 22-year officer, retiree health care for him and his spouse, a pension that he's paid into for over 22 years. Because remember, police officers pay into their pension. The general public thinks only the government gives them a free pension. No, police officers contribute. In Pennsylvania, we don't pay into Social Security. We pay directly into the police pension system. That's the law of the Commonwealth. That he's stripped of all that. So his entire pension system, his entire health care for him and his spouse is gone. He's fired from his career before he even reaches pension age. So all those years are gone. He had to go and take all of his contributions to his pension to pay for his criminal defense, essentially bankrupting the pension system, so his own pension system. So even, let's say, Steve prevails through all his appeals and everything, and we're able to determine through a good legal work and a good judicial system that is fair and unbiased, and I'll talk about that if you like in a minute. And they really look at this and they say, well, wait a minute, why didn't you preserve this evidence? If you don't preserve this evidence, none of it comes in. And that's the argument that the defense makes. I'm sure Keenan will talk to you about that. But the rule is, it's called spoliation. And if you don't preserve this, you don't get to just use this, because you had the ability to get it all, and you did it.
Of course.
And that's why under the rules. So could you imagine if this was just a, and I don't want to say a police officer is not a citizen, but can you imagine if we did this to a citizen and put them in prison, and a regular criminal, we'll call it a regular case, just a non-police officer involved case, and we didn't preserve that evidence, we would get laughed out of court. You would be on the witness stand, or I would be on the witness stand, and we'd say, Lieutenant Sutton, why didn't you I just didn't feel like it. There's only one view. That's what Heinz Field told us. Yeah. So Heinz Field told you, Lieutenant Sutton, or Officer Schwartzwelder, that this is all the only evidence you need. That's all you need. That's what happened here. That's all you need. That's all we got. That's all you need. Could you imagine us sitting on the witness stand saying that would be embarrassing to me? Especially when they have their investigator going down taking pictures of all those cameras. Would you ask for that? No. He told me there was no alternate video. Well, when did he tell you this? 7 days or 9 days after the incident.
Yeah, it's the this stinks on every level. It stinks on every level.
Now, I'm sitting in court, Randy, and I know you're from Vegas, right? So Vegas is a big gambling town, right? Big gambling, right? So you know when you go to Vegas, you can bet on red and black. So I have a new game, and I learned this in the Matakovich trial. It's called sustained and overruled. So what you do is you just put up two boxes, and you go into a particular trial like I experienced in Steve's case, and the defense would object, and it was overruled. And then the prosecution would object, and it would be sustained. And I was able to predict with impunity about a 90%, 98% accuracy that when the prosecution objected, they were sustained, and when the defense objected, they were overruled. And I was actually making tick marks in my notebook. I understand people can lose cases, and maybe some of your listeners will say, that's the FOP president, and he's just crying over, spilled milk. No, because I got to say, in all the trials that I've ever sat in, whether they're administrative or criminal and so on, we've lost. Okay, we've had cases that we lose. I'm sure you've experienced that in your career.
Of course.
But I never walked out of there feeling that the trial was imbalanced or unfair. I was sick over this case, not because of the results, but even based on the conduct during the trial.
You're talking about conduct of the judge.
Correct. How do you receive so many sustains from the prosecution and equally a massive amount from a very highly skilled, competent criminal defense attorney with overrules? They're not just objecting to object. They have to have some basis to object. Right. You know that, and I know that.
Of course.
And for them to object and to constantly be overruled, but the other side to constantly be sustained. I mean, you just can't predict it.
Let me ask you this. I mean, by all accounts from Stephen and from you, the strings have been pulled here by the powerful organization of the Steelers and Heinz Field. I mean, they seem to be the puppeteers here, pulling the strings of the chief of police, the attorney general or the U.S. attorney's office, for forcing these prosecutions. Do you think that played a role in the decision-making by the judge as well?
Oh, absolutely. If you think about it, you're a judge, right? We're going to call you Judge Sutton for a minute. And you find out with your experience, you now become a member of the judiciary, that you had investigators on scene in a timely manner, and the investigative notes clearly point out to you as a judge that they had the opportunity to preserve, and the investigators themselves stated, well, the guy that runs the organization told us that's the only video that was available, and there was no other video available, and we just took that for an okay answer. That's okay to do that. Now, you're not going to flip out as a judge. I'm going to flip out as a judge. And I'm talking as a cop. I'm going to look at the cops, and I'm going to say, what are you guys doing over there? Why didn't you pull all this? You're creating problems for me as a judge now, you know, in this case. Now I have to determine the rights of the defendant, which that's where they balance towards, right? That's our system. The prosecution has to prove by following all the rules that this defendant is guilty, right? That's the rules. That's the way we play it in this country. That didn't happen in this case. See, when law enforcement and the prosecution's office don't play by all the rules, our system of justice fails.
Correct.
That's the way it goes. That's the way exactly it goes. Right.
And the jury could only see the evidence that was allowed by the judge.
You got it. And therein lies the rub. So the judge is the referee, right? We look at a judge as a referee that balances the rules of evidence and its sufficiency and its probative value and all those fancy terms. And they balance this out throughout the trial. Their job is to make sure that the two sides are playing fairly and playing by the rules. That's their job. And so that when that case gets to the fact finder, that judge is allowing things in or excluding things to not corrupt the mindset of the fact finder, in this case, the jury. And when you allow that in, when you didn't do your job to preserve, you now let the jury now become corrupt. And the sole function, in my own personal opinion, of a judge is to make sure that those rules are followed throughout. And if one side violates the rules, the penalty is exclusion. That's the penalty. And you know that, Randy, from your own experience. The penalty is exclusion. If you and I do an improper search of a car or whatever, and the defense proves that, guess what happens to our evidence? It leaves. And guess what also happens a lot of times? The case is dismissed, and the defendant goes free. That is the basis of our system. And whether people like it in this country or not, our system was founded on that. Exactly. It's a benefit. That's why nobody has to give compelled statements against their Fifth Amendment rights and all this kind of stuff. It's the Constitution. But it seems to me that we like to play fast and loose with the rules when it comes to a police officer. In other words, a police officer is not a citizen of this country. A police officer is not entitled to their rights. Fortunately, the Supreme Court sees it differently.
Well, we can only hope now with the appeal of Stephen's case that justice at least begins to turn, because there will only be justice if the full truth comes out and Stephen is made whole again. And I don't know that could ever happen.
Yeah, I don't know how he rebuilds his reputation, Randy. I don't know what we got to do to, you know, if he's successful through all this stuff, through all this ordeal that he's about. Remember, this is just the beginning. You know, the beginning of the ordeal, everybody thinks happened back, you know, and if they would have played by the rules, we probably gotten this far. But now he's facing prison time, and I've already talked about the financial loss,
yes,
and the career loss that he suffered. Now he's going to have to go through this whole appeal process. And we don't know what that could be. That could be a new trial. That could be a dismissal of the prosecution. That could be an upholding of the verdict. You know, all these different things can happen. And so now begins that lengthy ordeal. So let's say that takes 3 to 5 years total. You know, now Steve's 5 years older. You know, he's done the prison time already. How do we give it back to him if he's already done the prison time? You know, so I look at it this way. You know, it bothers me deeply as a professional in this business that we don't give our police officers, when we investigate them, the same due diligence as we give to a citizen, a regular, everyday citizen out there.
In fact, it's just the opposite.
Correct.
In this case.
That's correct. Well, and I'm sure on your show you cover this stuff all the time, and I know you're aware of it. I know you've written extensively on different things, and you know exactly what I'm talking about.
I do, and you know, we've run out of time.
Okay.
And you know, we could literally, you and I could talk about this for hours, quite literally. But what's really important is the perspective that you have as a seasoned law enforcement officer, as being really on the front lines of this case from the very beginning, and your perspective as the president of the Fraternal Order of Police Lodge. You know, I feel your frustration. I understand that you know, when the one of your officers, like Sergeant Tokovich, is degraded in such a way as he has been, that it hits very personal to you, and I appreciate your dedication, your staying attuned to this, and working to bring justice, and that's all we can ask.
And Randy, I just like to thank you, Randy, very much for covering issues like this. It's very important that the public knows about it. It's really enlightening that a professional law enforcement officer like yourself has decided to pursue this, we'll call it your second career, for lack of a better term, and to take your experiences and your ability in the media to bring these very important issues to light to the general public. So I thank you as well.
Well, I appreciate that. Thanks for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Randy.
End of watch.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we pay our respects to those men and women who have given their lives in the line of duty. This week, I have two names to read. First is Corporal James Eric Chapman of the Johnston Police Department in South Carolina. Corporal Eric Chapman was killed in a single vehicle crash on Columbia Road between Star and Jet Middle School at approximately 10:30 p.m. He was responding to back up another officer who was dealing with an armed individual when his vehicle hydroplaned. He was ejected from the vehicle as it overturned multiple times. He was transported to Augusta University Trauma Unit, where he was pronounced dead shortly before midnight. Corporal Chapman was a U.S. Marine Corps veteran, had served with the Johnston Police Department for 2.5 years. He survived by his wife, daughter, 3 stepchildren, parents, and 2 sisters. Corporal James Eric Chapman, Johnston Police Department, South Carolina, end of watch, December 8th, 2017. The second is Deputy Chief Sander Cohen of the Maryland Office of the State Fire Marshal in Maryland. Deputy Chief Sander Cohen was struck and killed by a vehicle on southbound I-270 near Falls Road in Montgomery County while assisting at the scene of another crash involving an off-duty FBI agent. Deputy Chief Cohen was off-duty when he encountered a single vehicle crash that was blocking the left lane of the interstate. He activated his flashers and notified Maryland State Police Barracks that he was checking out the welfare of the driver. Supervisory Special Agent Carlos Wolf. He and Agent Wolf were standing on the shoulder of the highway when another vehicle swerved to avoid the crash scene. The vehicle struck Deputy Chief Cohen and Agent Wolf, throwing them both over the Jersey wall into the northbound lanes. They both suffered fatal injuries as a result of being struck. Deputy Chief Cohen has served as a law enforcement investigator with the Maryland Office of the State Fire Marshal for 9 years. Deputy Chief Sander Cohen, Maryland Office of State Fire Marshal, end of watch, Friday, December 8th, 2017. These officers gave their lives in the line of duty. May they rest in peace. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. Now, I'm your host, Randy Sutton. You can find me at Facebook. If you look under Facebook and you see Randy Sutton Public Figure, just like that or follow it, and you can see everything that I write and post. You can communicate with me there as well. I answer all of my messages personally. You can also find me at Twitter at LT Randy Sutton, LT Randy Sutton at Twitter. And you can find my books at Amazon.com. I have 4 books, and I think you'll like them. A Cop's Life, True Blue, police stories by those who have lived them, True Blue to protect and serve, and the power of legacy. Thanks again.